Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel and Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara today is going to deal with the question that you all raised yesterday, which is that you have these languages or these expressions that are utilized by the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that he is a Nazir, and the Gemara is going to question, why is it that he is a Nazir? Why are you so certain that these words, or the explanation of these words, mean that he is a Nazir? You could give alternate explanations for those expressions. And so the Gemara wants to know, why is the Mishnah so convinced that when he uses this type of language or this type of expression, that he is a Nazir? So, Hareini Kazeh, I'll be like this, or like him. Now, here you have a difficulty in the Girsa, because the way the Gemara reads now is, Nhi Nami Tafus Bisaro, even though he's holding on to the hair of the Nazir, Hareini Kazeh Lo Amar. He didn't say Hareini Kazeh. Obviously, that's problematic because that's exactly what he said. He said Hareini Kazeh. And the Mishnah itself says that he said Hareini Kazeh. So you have a number of different approaches to deal with this. Most of them are that the Rishonim had alternate Girsaot. They don't have the Girsa that we have. The simplest one is brought in the Mifaresh. You can see already on the side of the Mifaresh that they changed the Nusach to Bazeh, which is that Hareini Kazeh, when you're holding on to the hair, is not the proper expression. It wouldn't be an expression of Nizirut. What, I want to be like the hair? That doesn't make sense. But rather, Hareini Bazeh, with this, I want to become a Nazir, that expression would have worked. So since he did not say Hareini Bazeh, but rather said Hareini Kazeh, that references usually to a person or a status, rather than simply an object like the hair. And so the use of Hareini Kazeh instead of Hareini Bazeh is a failure in his ability to create the Nazirut, and the Amar Shmuel, Kegon She'en Nazir Over Lefanav. Now that's a situation in which the Nazir is walking in front of him and he says, Hareini Kazeh, then we understand what it means, Hareini Kazeh, I want to be like that Nazir, and therefore it is the proper expression in that case. That's the way that you see the Mefereish and others spin it. Right? The Balei HaTosafot also on the previous Amud raised the issue and say that, Yesh Svarim Dekhtibayan Hareini Kazeh, Lo Amar. Achein Ta'utu. It's gotta be a mistake. Shrei B'matit and Tani Behejio. That's what he said, Hareini Kazeh. So it can't be that he didn't say Hareini Kazeh if that's what's written in the Mishnah. So Tosafot makes it clear that that cannot be the correct Girsa in the Gemara. And he had a different Girsa. His Girsa is, He Nami the Tafis Bisaro. Then if he's holding onto his hair, Harei Nazir Lo Amar. He didn't say, I want to be a Nazir. He just said, Hareini Kazeh. Again, which is a failing expression in this case. So that's the way the Tosafot has it. The Rosh actually has a different Girsa, which is, Nehi. Nami de tofis pisaro. Even though he's holding onto the hair, lo amar klum. He didn't say anything. That has no meaning in this context. And that's probably what it means in the Gemara, even our Girsa, when it says, Hareini Kazeh lo amar, doesn't mean that he didn't say it, but lo amar klum. That doesn't have any meaning in this context. And therefore, what the solution to that problem is that we have a Nazir over the fanav, and then he says, Hareini Kazeh. Now, the Rosh over here says, well, once you set it up that way, that there's a Nazir walking in front of him, and he says, Hareini Kazeh, what is the question? Well, why would you even think otherwise? That's pretty obvious that he's making a statement. So the Rosh suggests, Rishum to lo tema, Hareini Kazeh, be'osher, o biyofi, o biyichus. Some of the questions that you raised yesterday, that you could say, when he says Kazeh, I want to be rich like that guy, I want to have yichus like that guy, I want to look good like that guy. So there could be other meanings to Hareini Kazeh. And what the Rosh says is that the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that we do not assume that that is his intent. Over here, the overwhelming evidence leads us to believe that the Hareini Kazeh is a statement of context in which he's passing him. And that when a person uses the word Hareini, it means that this is an assumption or an obligation that they're accepting. And therefore, contextually would mean that he wants to take on a Neder Nizirut. There are those that want to say that not only does the Gemara think that there has to be a Nazir walking in front of him, he also has to be holding the hair. That's how do you know that Hareini Kazeh doesn't mean all these other things? Because not only is the Nazir walking in front of him, but he's holding the hair. Let's explain it that way. Again, the Rosh over here says that Hareini by itself would not suffice. You would have to say Hareini Kazeh, similar to what we saw in the Balei HaTosafot yesterday. And just remind you that the Ran and Nedarim disagreed with that and says Hareini is no worse than a hay. And if a hay works, then Hareini works. And Kazeh you only need when you have a language that is somehow has a deficit to it, then the Kazeh can mitigate that deficit. But if a situation where there's a Nazir walking in front of you and say Harini, or you say Hey, operatively they should be equal, and you should be able to be Makabal in the Nazirut, again, the Rosh and the Balei Tosfot don't think that. They think that Harini by itself is a subpar language, and therefore you need Kazeh, whereas a Hey by itself is a sufficient grounds to create the Nazirut when there's a Nazir walking in front of him. All right, Harini Misasel. Over here we said that Misasel means to play with one's hair, or to fix, grow out one's hair. Mimai dadein silsul sa'ara. How do you know that this silsul refers to the hair? Kede amarle hayamto dbe rabbi. This maidservant of the house of Rabbi, and we have this in a number of places in Shas, where the maidservant of Rabbi gives us an indication or helps us to interpret it words. Again, we're looking for the explanation of a word. Here you're talking about the Bavli. He's looking for a word that is in Hebrew and trying to understand what the colloquial usage of that word is. What's the meaning of the word? So here again, they're looking for silsul. They rely on Amto de Beirabi. Lau Gabra, she says to this individual, Admatai atam salsel b'sarecha. For how long or till when are you going to play around with your hair or grow out your hair? So you see that the word silsul is used in context with hair. That's the common usage of the word. Ema Torah. Let us say that it refers to Torah. Why? Dichtiv, salsaleha uturo memeka. That you should toy with it, meaning that one should be osek b'Torah, delve in and work on the Torah, uturo memeka, and then it will mimromeim, it will uplift you, it will raise you. So that salsaleha over there, again, has the same meaning as silsul with regards to hair. It means to toy with, to play with, but it doesn't necessarily have the context of hair. It can be in another context. And so who says that we're talking about hair here? Amar Shmuel, so Shmuel again defines for us Achanami, Shetafus Bisa'aro. Again, the context is where he's holding on to the hair of the Nazir, and therefore it's obvious that the verb silsul that he's using over here is silsul of hair and not silsul of any other meaning. To mean to toy, but not necessarily associated with Nazirut or with hair. Many point out that over here, it would not work if the Nazir is walking in front of him. That's not enough context to say that the silsul means an izirut. Others say there would be sufficient to walk in front of him, but Shmuel wanted to make all the cases here parallel, which is all of them are talking about a case where he's tofes bisaro. Next case is Harini Michalkel. So Yechiel, you raised this issue yesterday. Harini Michalkel, mimai dahadein kilkul sarohu. How do you know that the word kilkul, again, is used to reference to hair? Kiditznan. So we have an example. This is of a Mishnah. The Mishnah says sid. What is the quantity of plaster that one must take out on Shabbat in order to be chayav? What's the minimum amount? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kidei lasud kilkul. In order to plaster a kilkul, ve'amarav, Rav explains to us, what is this kilkul? Over there in the Gemara in Shabbat, it says tzida u'bat tzida. And really, the definition of the word kilkul is tzida and not bat tzida. But either way, what it's explaining over here is it was used to plaster the temples of the women. Whether it was used as a depilatory to take off the hair around the temples, or it was used to plaster the hair back, and therefore when she covered her hair, all the hair that hung down stayed up inside of the hair covering and did not fall down. So it was used more like a mousse to hold the hair in place. But that's the seed. But you see the association between kilkul. The definition here of this practice is called kilkul. And that association is with hair. Ema. Why do you have to say that? We have other associations with the word kilkul. We mentioned yesterday, michalkel chayim. Over here, the Gemara mentions, ema mezen aniye. Maybe he's making a commitment to feed the poor or to support the poor. Kidichtiv, because it says, vayosef, vayichalkel yosef et aviv et echav. That Yosef supported his brothers and his father. So you see the word kilkul is not only used in the context of hair, it's also used in the context of support or to provide support. So over here, maybe he's making a nether to support those that are less fortunate. Amar Shmuel, Achanami, Shetafus Bisaro. Again, contextually, he's holding on to the hair of the Nazir, and therefore, in that context, the word kilkul obviously means reference to hair, or that he wants to do something with the hair, and that references to Nazirut. Now, Hare Alai L'Shaleach Pera, I am going to grow out my hair wildly. Or is it Nazir? That person is a Nazir. Mimai Dadein Shiluach Ribuyehu. How do you know that this word shiluach means to grow out? How do you know that? What's the meaning of the word shiluach? Dichtiv. So the Gemara brings an example of that, which is shlachayich pardes rimonim. Your shoots are like an orchard of pomegranates. Now the Mifaresh over here explains gidulech shigdelim, that your growth, or whether it means those that you bring up, or the growth of yourself, you kipardes rimonim shetzomeach mitgadel, should be like an orchard of pomegranates which grows and expands. So similarly, that should be your lot, which means that shlachayich is talking about something along the lines of expansion or extension. And therefore, shlachayich or shiluach means to grow or to extend. Ema mide de avure. Who says that that's the only definition? Maybe it means to remove. Lishaleach, or to send away, means to remove something or to rid oneself of something. Kirichtiv, because it says in the pasuk in Iyov, Vishaleach mayim al pnei chutzot. Over there it's describing the powers of Hashem. And it says over there that Hashem brings rain to the world, and He provides water for the fields. So the pashtut of pasuk is that He sends out water, or He spreads water over the fields. Over here, the Gemara means that Vishaleach means that He moves the water to the fields or from field to field. So that means it's a removal. It's not something growing, but rather something where you are ma'avir, that you remove it or you move it from place to place. So if that's the case, now we have evidence to both sides, that shiluach can mean to remove, or shiluach can mean to grow out. So how do you know when he says lishaleach pera, that he means to grow out his hair wildly? Maybe he means to remove that wild hair that he has on his head. He wants to get rid of it. He wants to take a haircut. Who says that he's taking on a nezirut? So tana, pera, pera, yolif. The Gzeira Shova, pera, pera, teaches us this. Now, Tosafot over here claims that that's not the answer for our Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, and this is coming to explain the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which has ramifications for our Mishnah. And then if you look in the Rosh over here says, Klomer Tana de Matnitin. The Tana of our Mishnah makes this Gzeira Shova. Ktivocha, kadosh iya gadel pera, says by the Nazir that he will be kadosh and grow out his hair. Uchtiv otom, and it says over there, Gabe Kohen Hejot, that is in the Perek in Yechezkel, that discusses the role of the Kohanim and what obligations they have. Over there it says, Upera lo yishalechu. They may not grow out a pera. So now, the way that Tosafot learns the Gzeir Shava is that the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, how do you know that a Kohen may not grow out his hair for more than 30 days? How do you know that a Kohen Hejot must get his hair cut every 30 days? It says over here, upera lo yishalechu. They may not grow out their hair wildly. How do you know what pera is? That's the gzeir shava to nazir. Over in nazir, it also uses the word pera. Now, we know that stam nizirut is shloshim yom. Because of the word yiyah, we'll see that later in the Masechta, the gematria of yiyah is 30. And therefore, the Gemara learns out that stam nizirut is 30 days. So now, if you know that stam nizirut is 30 days, and the word pera is used in the context of nazir, then when we go to the Kohen Hejot that says pera lo yishalechu, he may not have a pera, that means that he may not have hair that grows longer than 30 days. So that's how Tosafot says the Gzeir Shav is. And then that has ramifications over here. Once we establish that the word pera means to grow one's hair out for 30 days, and over there it says lo yishalechu in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, don't grow it out for 30 days, then it obviously means over here when you use the pera yishlach, Yishlach means to grow out in the context of our Mishnah. So once you've established that the Pasuk in Yechezkel is talking about 30 days, and obviously 30 days doesn't mean pera lo yishalechu means that they should grow it out for 30 days. That doesn't make sense in the context. Pera lo yishalechu means that a pera, which is more than 30 days, lo yishalechu, they should not grow it. They should not allow it to expand. Not that they shouldn't cut it off. And so once you've established that fact, now when you come to our Mishnah, you can learn it. The Rosh, on the other hand, says that the word upera lo yishalechu, you don't need the gzeira shava from Nazir to teach you that. He says that it's actually our Gemara is the gzeira shava is this way. Upera lo yishalechu, clearly there the word lo yishalechu means not to grow out. Because otherwise it should have said lo yishalach pera. The fact that it says upera lo yishalechu clearly means that the word lo yishalechu over there means to grow out. And so the pera pera means that the definition of the word pera over there by Kohen Hedjot means to grow out. So too over here, by the Nazir, it also means to grow out. And once we know that it's to grow out, then when he says that I want to be Shlach Pera, that means he wants to be like a Nazir. Then the Gzeres Shavah afterwards, there's a second Gzeres Shavah, or the other direction of the Gzeres Shavah is that you also learn 30 days from Nazir back to Kohen Hedjot. So therefore, the Balei Tosfot said this is all outside of our sugya. It's all that Gemara and Sanhedrin about. Kohen Hedjot is 30 days. Once we've established that Kohen Hedjot is 30 days, then the word pera ishalach, based on that pasuk, makes sense to say that it means to grow out. And then the Rosh says that is how we get to the definition. The pasuk in Yechezkel, through Gzeres Shavah, teaches us pera ishalach means to grow out. Because of that, our Tana says that when you say ishalach pera, it means to grow out your hair. Right, vibay tema, I shaleach mayim nami ribuihu. That word shaleach, when we say shaleach mayim al pnei chutzot, doesn't mean to be mavir, to remove or to move along, but rather means to grow. Some have the girsa over here, kimitar game Rav Yosef, the way that Rav Yosef is mitar game. The kad mashkim le mayo, that when you feed or they give the fields to, when you water the fields, rabe the peyre, the fruits grow. And that's the targum, the translation of that pasuk is v'shaleach mayim al pnei chutzot, is that the waters of the watering of the fields causes shiluach, causes growth, causes things to emerge from the ground and to grow. And therefore, the word shaleach would mean to grow in that context. Now, just kimitargim Rav Yosef, we know that Rav Yosef fell ill during his life and was blind. And when he was blind, you could no longer could learn Torah shebichtav because you have to be korei mitoch haktav. And therefore, Rav Yosef was an expert in Targum, because he learned everything through the Targum, because davar shitein leketev yivshar lamam bi'al peh. And since he was blind, he had to do it bi'al peh. And based on that, he had to learn by the Targum. So therefore, many times in Shas, we see that the Gemara references the Targum of Rav Yosef. So now, kimi Targum Rav Yosef doesn't mean necessarily that he wrote a Targum of Iyov, but rather that he was familiar with the Targum of Iyov, because he learned it that way. On the other hand, it's true, if you look up the Targum in Iyov, that it doesn't say this. And so therefore, that would indicate that maybe Rav Yosef had his own Targum, or he had his own opinion in some places about how to translate things. And that's what the Gemara is referencing over here. Otherwise, there are others who just take it out of the Girsa and say it has nothing to do with Rav Yosef. The second thing that Tosafot raises over here is, the word l'shaleach is found all over Tanakh. And 99% of the times, the word shalach or l'shaleach in Tanakh means to send away. So what is the Gemara doing over here when it says, oh, v'shaleach mayim al pnei chutzot? Oh, that doesn't mean to send away. It means to grow. Great. It means to grow. I have another hundreds more of examples in Tanakh where the word l'shaleach means to send away. So why do I need you to tell me that over here, oh, it can mean that? So what the Balei Tosafot say in the end is, enoch hanami. The word l'shaleach generally means to send away. What the Gemara didn't want to happen is that we only have one example in Tanakh where the word l'shaleach means to grow. Right now, we only have the one example in Shir Shirim, which is shalach hayich. And based on one example, we don't want to set a precedent by which we say that the word l'shaleach can mean to grow. So what the Gemara wanted was another pasuk that corroborates this understanding of the word l'shaleach. And so when it went to shaleach mayim al pnei chutzot, it shows you, wait, that's not true. The word shaleach doesn't have that. And the Gemara comes back and says, no, you know what? Over there, it does mean to grow. So now once we find evidence that supports that explanation, it's more than once, then we don't say this is just like an unusual or yotzei charig example, an exceptional case. Now we find that the word is used in this manner. And so despite all the other evidence to the contrary, nevertheless, the word shaleach does have this meaning in certain psukim. And now that we find two psukim that have it, we can say that the colloquial usage of the word is used in that manner to grow. There are others who suggest that the word l'shaleach is used differently when it references to animate and inanimate objects. That l'shaleach with regards to animate objects means to grow, whereas l'shaleach with inanimate objects means to send away or to remove. And so that's the difference over here, that the shaleach and the shlachayich over here, which are talking about a person and the growing of the fields. Before we thought it was talking about the fields, the water, or the fields themselves. Now we're talking about, no, it's the growth on the fields. So then the word shaleach in that context means to grow. And then over here, when you're talking about a human being and talking about hair, we're talking about growth and not talking about to send away. Your question is a fair question. What I think is that the Mishnah, which is written in Eretz Yisrael, and is well steeped in the Hebrew language, as well as the usage of these words in Tanakh, that he says that these words are words that mean Nizirut. The Gemara, now you're talking about the Bavli, trying to interpret or understand why is it that that is the case? Why is it that this Hebrew word means this? Now, you're right. In a colloquialism, maybe that's what it meant and people would have understood it. Mar wants to understand why that is. If we look at the etymology of the word, it doesn't seem to mean this, or it seems to offer other alternatives. So what the Gemara is trying to do is understand that Tana from Eretz Yisrael, when he used these Hebrew words, why did he think this way, or why did he assume that those were expressions of Nizirut? Now, the Gemara says, Hari alai tziparin, if he says that, I accept upon myself birds, Rabbi Meir Omer Nazir, that he is a Nazir. Why should the acceptance of birds make a person into a Nazir? That's the question. Obviously, the Chachamim say it doesn't work, but why does Rabbi Meir say it does work? So now, my time with Rabbi Meir, what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir's position? Amar Ish Lakish, Tziparin Smuchim L'Sear Kibel Alav. When he says the word Tziparin, he doesn't literally mean birds. He means, in the context of the Psukim, we find a juxtaposition between Tziporim and hair. And so therefore, this person's using a poetic license to express hair through the word Tziparin. Because we find a Pasuk in Daniel, which is Dichtiv, Adisarei kin nishrin rabah, v'tifrohi kin tziparin. So this is the part of Daniel, which is in Aramaic. Here it references to Nebuchadnezzar, when Nebuchadnezzar becomes so haughty that he thinks he rules the whole world and everything belongs to him, he is given a punishment by Hashem that he is deposed from the throne, and then he's made to go out and live with the animals and out in the fields and go wild. And part of that wildness is a description of his physical appearance, which is Adi Sarei Kinishrin Rabbah, that his hair will grow out like the eagle, Vitifrohi, and his nails Kitsiparin, like those of a bird, like the talons of a bird. So that he's gonna not be well kept. He's going to be unkempt, and his hair will be wild, and his nails will be wild. But here you see a correlation between the word Tziparin and Sarei, where they are juxtaposed in the Pasuk. Now that in and of itself is somewhat problematic, because the Gemara says here, Remeir Savar, Matpis Inish Bimide de Samichle, a person uses this ahat pasa, that's a word we know from Nidarim, which is that you use a Davar Nadur to generate your neder, or your neder nizirut. So over here, you're talking about the word siparin, which is connected to sear, has that impact. Rabbanan, sarve loma pishine de midim islamichle. But people don't do that. So that's Resh Lakish's explanation. The problem is that if that's really true, then first of all, the examples in the Mishnah should have been not siparin, because siparin is not the closest word to sarei in the pasuk. He could have said, hare alai kinishrin, or hey alai kitifroi. He could have said many other words that are closer in the pasuk to the word sear, and that would have been a better poetic usage or a connection to sear. And so the Rishonim point out that that in and of itself is not sufficient grounds for you to say that you are a Nazir. There must be something else that is the driving force over here that makes it that Rabbi Meir believes that when you say tziparin, it means sear, and it means an acceptance of a nizirut. It can't solely be that he is relying on this connection in the pasuk. So the way that the Mifaresh explains it here, it's the last line of Mifaresh, Kugon Shaya Nazir Over Lefanav, Otafus Pisaro. The Mifaresh says, you need context. It's not just this pasuk itself, and smichon in the pasuk, but it's also the context that there's a nazir walking in front of him, and he quotes, Hare alai kitziparin, when the nazir is walking in front of him. Or, when he's holding onto the hair of the nazir, he says, Hare kitziparin. That reference correlates with the word seyar in the pasuk. So context plus the smichut allows it to happen. The Rabbanan obviously disagree and say that it's just not clear enough. His expression is clearly not sufficient to make it into a neder nizirut. That's the way that he explains it. The other Tosafot explains it this way. He says, Mistama hachi kamar. Mistama, this is what he means. Hare alai mitzvah deshaichi beit tziporin hatluya b'mitzvah tseyar. We reinterpret his words, not to say simply it's about the smichut between hair and tziporin. Tziporin are relevant in Nazir. That is because a Nazir Tamei brings birds as his korban. So what we're saying is here, the word tziporin by itself is not sufficient. But the word tziporin together with seyar, If I piece the puzzle together, I get a picture that looks like this. Harei alai mitzvah. I'm trying to do the mitzvah. The shaychi beit Tzipporin, where Tzipporin are relevant, that's Nazirut. Hatzmuya b'seyar, but also is connected to hair, or hair is a central part of that. So because of the word Tzipporin in this context of seyar, plus his intent seems to be to make a Nazirut, all of those things together seemingly generate the Neder Nazirut over here. And what many of the Rishonim suggest over here is that Reish Lakish, who gives this explanation, does not fundamentally disagree with Rabbi Yochanan. I'm going to see Rabbi Yochanan in a second, that Rabbi Meir's meaning over here is Shema Tzipurei Nazir Tamei Kibel Alav. Maybe he was talking about the Tzipurei Nazir. So Tzipurim are relevant to Nazirut. And so Reish Lakish doesn't deny that fact. And together with the connection in the Pasuk, that's what generates the Nether over here. The Rosh over here does not like the way that Tosafot formulates it, which is that Reish Lakish agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, and he says that may not be the case. It just may be the case that Reish Lakish requires a Nazir to walk in front of you when there's some sort of deficit in the language. The more expansive your language is, the less context you need. And the less clear your language is, the more context you need. It has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan saying, Tzipporim are relevant by Nazir. No. It's just simply, if you just use the word Tzipporim by itself, you're not clear what that means. Therefore, I need a Nazir walking in front of you. On the other hand, if you say Tzipporim that is connected to Seyar, then you won't need a Nazir walking in front of you because you've made it clear that you're talking about Tzipporim that's connected to Seyar, which is clearly about Nizirut. So he doesn't like Tosfos' conclusion that Reish Lakish also believes that Rabbi Yochanan is correct, because he says that doesn't necessarily have to be true. But you see, all the Rishonim here at least agree that the Smichut HaParsha is not by itself would not be sufficient. You need something else to generate the Nazirut, whether that's a Nazir walking in front of you, which the Gemara will say later, or that is the fact that he mentioned Tzipporim and Seyar, which are both relevant by Nazir, and that's similar to what Rabbi Yochanan says, or simply the fact that this language can be associated with a Nazir if it's said in a manner or in a fashion that gives you context to mean that it is a Nazir. And the Rabbanan Savre lo mapishinish bimedit isamichle, that the Rabbanan believe that just because it's juxtaposed or they are adjacent in the Pasuk is not sufficient grounds, because there is a need for hafla'a by Nazirut, and even with the Nazir walking in front of you, it's still not sufficient articulation to make it that you are a Nazir. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, no. The Kuli Alma lo matpis. Everybody agrees that this word association game doesn't work. Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Elo, hainu time of the Rabbi Meir. This is the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir's position. D'chayshinan shema tzipurei nazir tamei kibel alav. That we worry about, or we are choshesh, that maybe this guy, when he said tzipurim, he meant the tzipurim of a nazir tamei. And therefore, tzipurim can mean nizirut. So since it can mean Nizirut, Rabbi Meir says that's sufficient grounds to make him into a Nazir. The Gemara says, Michtei, Chashinam Kamar? You say we worry about the fact. So what it's clear here is it's not obvious. When you say the word Tzipporin, it's not obvious that that means Nizirut. What we're saying is there's a possibility it could be Nizirut. Well, if you say it could be a possibility, that is not necessarily a good conclusion. Because, so here you have different explanations of this. The Mefaresh says, well, if you're going to say chashinan, velo nitna nizirut ala hafla'a, we know that nizirut has to be clear and articulate. V'amai kamar Rabbi Meir, d'ami nazir klau. If you're just saying to me it's a chashash that he meant the tzipurim of nazir, that's not sufficient grounds to make him into nazir. You need hafla'a. You need clear expression. That fails over here. So why would that be Rabbi Meir's reasoning? Or, what does it mean? Michtei chashinan, Tosafot says that we will never assume that the first thing that this guy is saying is a neder nizirut. Because Tosafot on the previous Amud describes a neder nizirut as the chamirle utrichale. It's something very severe, and it's a great burden to become a nazir. So if I have a choice in interpreting an expression, the last thing I'm going to do is interpret it as a nizirut, because that's the least likely interpretation that this individual would give to the item. Or the way that the Rosh explains it, he mentioned this earlier also on Daf Bet, which is that whenever you have safek nizirut, it's the hakel. So over here, if you have a safek, whether he's a nizir or not, you go to kula and he would not be a nazir. Or the Rosh then brings an alternate version, which says, the chayshinan over here means, well, if you're going to be choshesh, then you should also be choshesh for the other side. not only should he have to be a Nazir, he should also have to be Choshesh for the other interpretation. What is that other interpretation? Dilma Tzipurei Nidava Kibel Alav. Maybe he was saying, I want to bring a Kurban Nidava of birds. How do you know it references to the Tziporim of the Nazir? So the Gemara says, Im Kain, Hare Alai Kain Mibayile. The proper expression, or the common way to express a nidava birds, is a kain. Means a pair or a group of birds that you bring. That's why we have a Masechet Kinim, which talks all about the bringing of birds in the Migdash. And therefore, the common usage or the word that would have been in use was kain. The fact that he uses tziporim already indicates that he's trying to say something else, not a nidava bringing birds. So, according to the different interpretations, what the Gemara now suggested was, either, if you have two possibilities to explain this wording, whether it means nazir or it means a voluntary donation of birds, Tosfot says we would opt for voluntary donation of birds because nazir is too chamor. Or for the rosh, that's a safek, and you should all go to hakel and go to the side of just donating birds and not the nazirut. According to the mifaresh, it makes more sense to talk about something that doesn't need hafla'a, like the nidava versus nazir, which requires hafla'a, and he fails to do over here. Or according to the rosh, the suggestion is here, let him bring the birds and do a nizirut. Why is he only doing a nizirut? He should do both of them. They're both equal interpretations. The Gemara rejects this and says that can't be the interpretation of Tziporim, because that's not the way you would express a voluntary donation of birds. But Dilma, Hare Alai, Tziporei, Mitzora, Ke'amar. Maybe he means that I'm going to bring the birds of a Mitzora. The way the Mifaresh explains it over here is that I'm going to do like what the Mitzora does to his birds, which is that they shecht one of them, then they dip the other one in the blood, and they send it away. I'm going to simulate whatever the Mitzora does. That seems like an interesting explanation. Most of the Rishonim say, what we had said yesterday, is that he is going to donate to a Mitzora the birds that he needs for his process of Tahara. So that's what it means, that he's accepting. Now, the reason to believe that that's the case, and why there's more evidence to this fact, is that by the Tziporei Mitzora, the word Tzipor is used by Mitzora. By the case of a Nazir, the word Tzipor is not used. The word Tor is used, or B'nai Yonah. So the word Tzipor itself is used by Mitzora. That means that if I had to look at a choice between interpreting the word Tzipor to deal with Nazirut or Mitzora, to me, the more likely outcome is a Mitzora and not a Nazir. So if that's the case, then all of these questions arise again. According to the Mifaresh, the Mitzora, you don't need that type of Hafla'a. So it makes more sense that you're talking about a Mitzora instead of a Nazir. According to the Rosh, you go, Nizirut is the Hakel. Tzipor seems to reference Mitzora even better. So definitely go that way. And the same with Tosafot. That why would you be Machmir on something that people don't usually do, which is a Nizirut, instead of saying what's a more obvious thing, the guy's going to pay for someone's Korbanot. Or according to the other interpretation of the Rosh, why doesn't he do a Nizirut and bring the Korbanot of a Mitzora? He should have to do both of them in this case. The word Tzipor is not a colloquial usage, probably, in their day. Tzipor is a word from the Tanakh. And therefore, if you reference Tzipor, we're trying to understand when this guy uses this poetic or less used. Someone uses a very proper English word. Then in that case, it's not what's used on the street. It's not in common usage. How do we understand that word? That's what's happening over here. The word Tzipor is probably not a colloquial word. It's a word that is referencing Tanakh. So now we're trying to understand, when a guy does this, what exactly is he referencing? Is he referencing that pasuk in Daniel? Is he referencing the Tziporei Mitzora? Is he referencing the Tziporei Nazir? What is he thinking when he says something like this? Because it's not obvious what he means. It's an unusual, it's a less common usage of the word. Because they would have used the word Cain, which seems to be the more common terminology that would have been used. So Gemara says, Kigon Shaya Nazir Over Lefanav. There was a Nazir walking in front of him. So here, this changes the whole game. Because now we've given context to the statement. So there's Nazir walking in front of him, and then he says, Hare Alai Tziporim. So Tziporim, with the Nazir walking in front of him, we will associate those Tziporim with the Nazir. But the Gemara again says, V'dilma, Nazir Tamei, Ulupotro min Karbonotav Kamar. Maybe it's a Nazir Tamei walking in front of him, and what he means is, I will donate the Tziporim that this Nazir Tamei has to bring in order to restart his Nazirut. So how do you know, again, that it means that he wants to have a Nizirut? You have an equally plausible explanation over here that it means the korbanot of this Nazir Tamei. Kagon, Shea Nazir Tahor, Over Lefanav. It's a case where there is a Nazir Tahor walking in front of him. So now when it's a Nazir Tahor, Number one, it's not talking about a mitzvah. It has to be talking about a nazir, because context means nazir. So now you have possibilities. What does it mean? Then he talks about siporim when it comes to a nazir tahor. So you have two possibilities. One possibility is that he means to make himself into a nazir. Or the other possibility is that he is saying that when this nazir tahor becomes tamei, I will pay for his birds. Tosfot over here says, how do you know that when he means over here that it's a nazir tahor, that he means that he wants to be a nazir? Maybe he means that he wants to donate the korban oath if he becomes tamei. Can't say that because he says Billy Bo. In his heart, he tells us that's what he meant. He meant to say that he wanted to be a nazir. And when he tells us that, we believe him. So then Tosfot goes back and says, okay, if I'm telling you that that's what he meant, then when the nazir tamei is walking in front of him, why don't we say the same thing? Why don't we say when the nazir tamei is walking in front of him, that's what he had in mind. In his heart, he wanted to be a nazir. And if he tells us that, that should be the interpretation. So what he says is, that is implausible. If you remember, the Rosh in Nidarim said this numerous times, that when we have different possible interpretations of a neder, and the person comes to us and says, this is what I meant, sometimes we believed him, sometimes we did not believe him. The Rosh says, you know, when we believe him, is when it's a plausible explanation for the neder. If it's an implausible explanation, we will not believe him unless he articulates that he said that, he explained it at the time, then we will not believe him. And that's what Tosfot says over here. It's an implausible explanation that when a Nazir Tamei is walking by, and he says, Harei Alei Tzipurim, that he means that he wants to be a Nazir. Again, for the same reason Tosfot said before, Nazirut is very difficult. And that's the last thing you think someone would do. And therefore, if he tells us that's what he meant, we're not going to believe him, because that seems the most unlikely, implausible explanation. And therefore, he says over here, Ve'ein koach v'makshevet alev da'achriya diburei, and his heart cannot change the meaning of the words, Nizrut ein zeh piv v'libo shavim. And therefore, we will not allow that interpretation of his nether, because we don't feel that's what he really meant when he articulated such an item. Or, Tosafot says, when there's a Nazir Tahor walking in front of him, to say that when he becomes a Nazir Tamei, I will provide his birds, that's a Davar Shelo Ba'li Olam. And a Davar Shelo Ba'li Olam, we would not consider that. We don't assume that to be a plausible explanation of his neder, and therefore we'll opt to agree with what he is telling us, that he meant to be a Nazir, and not to provide the birds for a Nazir Tamei. That's the conclusion. All right. So Gemara says, Mai Binayu, what's the difference between them? What's the nafkamina, or the difference between the explanation of Rabbi Meir according to Reish Lakish, and explanation according to Rabbi Yochanan? The way that the Mifaresh explains it, Bein the Rabbi Yochanan, Bein the Reish Lakish, Lo mitarze shmaita lagon shenazir tahor aware lefanav. In the end, we saw the Mifaresh on the previous amud who says, for Reish Lakish, also you need a nazir walking in front of him. For Rabbi Yochanan, you need a nazir walking in front of him. So in the end, what's the difference? They both need a nazir walking in front of him, whether it's because of the smichut and the parshiot, or whether it's because tzipurim might mean the tzipurim of a nazir. Either way, in the end, you still need the same context and the same structure. Is there really any difference between the position of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? On the other hand, Tosafot thinks that the question is here is, Klomer, may b'dinayu b'perish d'matznitin. Based on the nature of this question of may b'dinayu, most of the Rishonim show from this that Reish Lakish is not solely relying on the smichut to generate the nizirut over here. And that's why the Gemara has the question, because he seems to look exactly like Rabbi Yochanan. And that's based on what we saw in the previous Amud, where we explained that the Mifarej, the Rosh, and the Tosafot all say that Reish Lakish has the more than just the smichut in order to generate the nizirut over here. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question of Mai Binayu over here. Whether that Mai Binayu means, what does the difference, halacha lemaisa, between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan? Or, according to the Balei HaTosafot, what is the difference in their interpretation of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah? Because since now in the end, the context, they both mean, or both require, a nazir over lefanav, then what's the difference between them? Gemara says here, it's a case where he specifically states the tzipurim that are next to se'ar on me. So he generates the smichut, not through association, but through articulation. So there, the Rabbi Yochanan, Afagav Damar Hachi, according to him, if he says this, in nazir ovelefanav in ilolo, if there's nazir walking in front of him, it works. If not, not. Reb Shimon Lakish, Afagav de nazir ovelefanav, then it does work, implying that when he did not articulate it, and it was simply a word association, Reish Lakish would also require a Nazir to walk in front of him. And that's basically what the Mefaresh says over here in the end. What's the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? They both require a Nazir to walk in front of him. The answer is, where he articulates it more clearly, there's a machlok whether you need the Nazir or not. And Tosafot supports this view that Reish Lakish has to hold this way because the Mefaresh pointed out before that these questions that we're asking here, maybe it's Sipurei Mitzora, maybe it's Sipurei Nedava, are questions that could be asked not only of Rabbi Yochanan, but could also be asked of Reish Lakish. How do you know when you say Tziporim, it means the one close to the hair in the Pasuk, you couldn't have all these other interpretations. And so based on that, they both need context. If they both need context, that means they need Nazir Over Lefanav. They need Ozer Fafanav, then what's the difference between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan? Either according to Tosafot in their explanation of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, or according to the Mefaresh and other Rishonim, in understanding their positions here, that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are disagreeing, what is the nafka mina in their positions? They both require context in the end. So Gemara says, "Mi'ika l'man d'amar lo mitpis inish b'milti d'samikle." The Gemara says, wait a minute. Is there anybody who doesn't agree that we have this idea of word association that can generate a neder? Vatanya. Homer yamin harezu shvua. If a person utilizes the word yamin, it has the power of a shvua. That's what it says in the Tosefta and Nidarim. The way that Tosfot expresses over here, he says, yamin shlo ochel kikar. This yamin, I will not eat a kikar. The word yamin in that context means a shvua. Why does yamin mean shvua? My tayama? What's the reasoning? La mishum dichtiv. Isn't it because the pasuk says at the end of Daniel, which is in Hebrew, not in Aramaic anymore, it says, Vayareim yimino usmolo ala shamayim, vayishava b'chei olam. Daniel is having a vision in which he's being communicated to about what's going to happen b'ketz yamim b'achrita yamim. And the individual speaking to him raises both his hands to the sky and takes a shvua in the chei olam by Hashem that this is what's going to happen. Now, you see here, there's an association between shvua and one's right hand and left hand. And therefore, you see the smichut aparshia when you use the word yamin. It means shvua, because in the pasuk, they contextually were juxtaposed or adjacent in the pasuk. So that shows you that we do have such a concept. It says, Amrei lo, yishum di yamin gufe yikre shvua. Now it's not from that pasuk, it's from another pasuk where the word yamin itself means shvua. Shneamar, nishba Hashem bimino, that Hashem took an oath by his right hand. So there you see, the right hand represents shvua directly. It's not from the word association. It's the shvua itself is with the right hand. Meaning that the right hand is like chetzah shel mitzvah. Like holding a sefer Torah, holding tefillin and taking a shvua. Hashem is taking a shvua, b'yamino, with his right hand. So you see that the yamino has that status of shvua or chetzah shel mitzvah for a shvua, that if you use the term yamino, it means that. It doesn't just mean it's associated with shvua. It is inherently a part of the shvua. And therefore, if you use it, it means shvua. Uminayin lomer small shishvua. How do you know if you say by the left hand, it also means a shvua? Shenemar, it's a continuation of that pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, nishva Hashem b'yamino, ubizroa uzo. So there, the Rishonim over here give two possibilities. The Rosh and the Mefaresh over here both bring these down. Either because the first one says yimino, then uzroo must mean left. Because if yimino is specified, then ubizroo uzo, by the strength of his arm, the arm here must be the left side if he already spelled out that the yimino was the right side. Or the other possibility is the Gemara in Brachot says, how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin? It brings this pasuk, ubizroo uzo, and there the Gemara says, Bein oz ela tefillin, and the Gemara tells you why. And it says, ubizroo uzo. Where do you put your tefillin on? You put your tefillin on your left hand, if you're a righty. You put your tefillin on your left arm. And so you see here, Zro Uzo, if the Gemara interprets that that's Hashem wearing tefillin, it must be on Hashem's left hand. And so therefore you know that the word Zroa over here means the left side. Therefore, the Gemara says that Tosefta in Nidarim that says that Yamin means Shvua is not because they are adjacent in the Pasuk. It's because the word Yamin is a Shvua. And the word small is a Shvua because of the way that it's used in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, not because of why it is adjacent in the Pasuk in Daniel. There we have no proof that this word association is subscribed to by everybody. And it is a machloka between Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokish as to whether it works or it doesn't work. All right, next Mishnah. Hareini nazir mina chartzanim umina zagim umina tiglachat umina tumah. Person takes a neder nazirut, but he specifies only parts of the surim of the nazirut. He doesn't just say hareini nazir. He doesn't just accept the nazirut. He says, I am a nazir from chartzanim. And then when the vav here doesn't mean and, it means or. Or he says, I'm a nazir from the Zagim, or I'm a nazir from Tiglach HaTumah. These are all the different parts of the nazirut. So he doesn't say the whole nazirut, he just specifies parts of the nazirut. The words chatzanim and zag, the Mishnah is going to have a machloket about what chatzanim and zag mean. Let us say, in totality, one of them means the pits, and one of them means the skins of the grapes. Which one means which is subject to a machloket, but the nazir is restricted in any grape product, and that's what's meant by chatzanim and zag. Means from any piece of the grape, there is a problem. Harez ne nazir. It works and he becomes a nazir. Bechol diktukei nizirut olav. He is a nazir and all the particulars of the nizirut come upon him. Tosafot over here points out, because we have a concept we're going to see upcoming in the Mishnayot, nazir shimshon, which only has part of the restrictions on him. So don't think when he takes on part of the restrictions, it means that he's trying to be a nazir shimshon. Or he's trying to be some sort of modified nazir. If he takes on any portion of the nazirut, he becomes a full-fledged nazir. Gemara says, Matnitin delok Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah certainly is not like the position of Rabbi Shimon, is not authored by Rabbi Shimon. Detani, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Enu Chayav, Ad Shidor Mikulam. He's not Chayav in nazirut until he lays out all of the items. Rabbanan Amre, Afilu Nazar Ela Bechad Minhon Abi Nazir. Even if he only takes the Neder Nizirut from one of these items, it expands and becomes a full-fledged Nizirut. So the Chachamim are clearly the authors of our Mishnah and not Rabbi Shimon. My time o the Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Domar Kroh. The Pasuk says, Mi Kol Asher Yaseh Mi Gefen Hayayim Mi Chartzanim Vaadzag. So the fact that the Pasuk begins, Mi Kol Asher Yaseh Mi Gefen. Everything that's made from the Geffen, then it specifies the Yayin and the Chatzanim and Zag. It's telling you that you have to specify all of these items. In order to be Chayav and Nizirut, you can't just say one of the items, you have to say all of them. Now, Josepho points out that Rabbi Shimon agrees that the person just says Harini Nazir, it works. He doesn't have to articulate or specify all the Nisirim. It's just, once he starts to specify the Nisirim, then he gets himself into a position where he has to start articulating or enumerating all of the Isurim, and it won't be sufficient. And the way that the Balei Tosafot say, that is not only true by Chatzan V'Zag, but also Tiglachat and Tumah. Just like the Torah gave us Mikol Asher by Chatzanim and Zag, it's showing you that it's not enough just to specify, you have to say everything. So if you're going down the path of specifying, you have to specify everything. If you're going down the path of just saying Nazir, that'll work by itself. Now, according to Rabbi Shimon, when the person says, Hare ani nazir mina chatzanim, so the Chachamim think he's a nazir. What does Rabbi Shimon think he is? So there are two possibilities. Either Rabbi Shimon thinks that's a neder levatala, and that there's no meaning to it, and therefore it falls away. Or Rabbi Shimon believes that that turns into a regular neder. He's not a nazir, but he is using nizirut as a hatpasa to generate an isur on the Chatzanim or the Zag, and it'll turn into a regular neder. The Chachamim, on the other hand, Rabbanan, my time up. What's the reason behind the Rabbanan's position? Amakra, Miyayin v'Sheikhar Yazir. If only from Yayin or Sheikhar, you can create a Nizirut. So it is sufficient to enumerate only one of the Isurim of the Nizirut, and that will generate a full-fledged Nizirut. Obviously, each one of them has to deal with the other's Pasuk, because Rabbi Shimon's evidence is good, and the Chachamim's evidence is good. What each does with the other pasuk, we'll take up in tomorrow's Gemara. Okay, so we're going to stop over here, two lines from the bottom of Gimel Mod Bet.